Welcome to the AI Training Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Latimer, founder of Grateful AI. For all our episodes, visit us at openaitraining.com. Today, we're diving into a truly inspiring conversation at the intersection of entrepreneurship, philanthropy, and integrity. Our esteemed guest is none other than Greg Clark, a visionary who has navigated multiple successful careers, spanning from founding and exiting College Pro Painters to venture capital, and now dedicating his life to philanthropy and consulting. Greg's journey is a testament to the power of transformation and the significance of staying true to one's values. He shares his experience in various sectors, offering insights into the essence of successful entrepreneurship, the importance of mentorship, and the role of integrity in personal and professional life. In this episode, we explore Greg's involvement with the Trails Youth Initiative, where his passion for nurturing potential shines. We dig into the intricacies of the program and how it aligns with his mission to help individuals realize their full potential. We discuss the power of keeping promises, the importance of aligning with like-minded people, and the transformational impact of genuine commitment to one's values and goals. Join us as we uncover the layers of Greg's remarkable journey, from his early years as an entrepreneur to his philanthropic endeavors. It's an episode filled with wisdom, inspiration, and invaluable lessons for anyone seeking to make a meaningful impact in their field. Stay tuned for a fun and lively discussion here on the AI Training Podcast. Grateful AI. It's been really interesting to reconnect with some of the people that I've interviewed 9 years ago, probably the longest follow-up for a podcast that I've ever heard of.
Yes, I mean, I was quite surprised. But
I'm actually in Mexico right now, in Sayulita, near Puerto Vallarta. Have you ever been out that way?
I've been to Puerto Vallarta. I don't recognize the other name you said.
Sayulita is about an hour and a half nearby, just a small little beach town near Puerto Vallarta. So not too far from where you were. When were you in Puerto Vallarta?
Oh, a long time ago, 15 years maybe.
Oh yeah. All right. What'll be interesting is contrasting the two questions from 10 years ago, because I'm going to ask the same ones. So there won't be any surprises, but yeah, it's just a real pleasure. I know that the last time we met, we got to meet face to face pre-COVID. And in my apartment there. So just an honor to be back. Without further ado, Greg, please share who you are and what you do.
My name is Greg Clark, and my quick tour of my history, I was at first stage of life was an entrepreneur running College Pro, and then I was a venture capitalist with Horatio Enterprise Fund. And in the third phase that I'm still in, it's a mixture of consultant and philanthropist, and on the consultant side, for profit, I advise companies how to set up boards, either governance boards for what those need, an advisory board to those that don't. And I end up usually helping staying on and running a board for them. And on the not-for-profit side, I get re-involved and have over the time a number of different charities. The first big one was Christian Resource Center in Regent Park. And the one I'm currently involved with is Trails Youth Initiative. That's why I'm wearing this t-shirt here today. That's a Trails t-shirt.
That's great.
It's based in Stouffville.
Yeah, I was doing some reading about Trails. Sounds like such a wonderful project to be a part of. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that project and how you got involved and what you can tell people about the work that you're doing there.
Sure. We'll start with how I got involved. It comes in two parts, Mark. The first is in 1992 when Trails was founded. The founder and a successful businessman and ad man in Toronto named Jim Hayhurst, who founded Hayhurst Advertising actually here in Toronto. And actually General Foods, where I worked at the time, was one of his clients. So we connected that way. And when he started up Trails, he asked me to come on the board because he knew about my College Pro experience. And his co-founder was his son, Jimmy Hayhurst, who was a young man at the time in his 20s. and he needed to run this organization. He didn't have a ton of managerial experience and thought that I could help out given all, because College Pro wasn't really in the painting business. We were in the management development business. So I went on the board for 3 or 4 years and helped out with that. And then I went on with other things, and Jim Hayhurst, whose nickname is Hurst, I'll probably refer to him as Hurst, carried on and developed Trails to be quite successful. And the concept of Trails is, it's Hurst's line for it was, it has a big impact on a few rather than a small impact on a lot. And the program is called 4 Seasons, 4 Years, 4 Life. They take kids 12 to 16 years old from the inner city, and take them up for 1 weekend to their site near Soulville, 1 weekend a month, and then 2 weeks in the summer for 4 years, and then has a program afterwards to help them go on to get bursaries for university and help them get jobs. So it's a very longitudinal program, as you call it. But I stayed in touch with Hurst. I'm a letter writer who so is he during those years. And in March of 2019, he called me up and said, Greg, Trails is so successful. We want to double the size of it from 80 kids to 160. So we need a strategic plan to do that. And can you come up? Can you help us do that? You like strategic plans. So I said, sure. And I went up and I met the new president, a young woman named Melissa Millward. And I worked with her over the summer, March, April, May, June, July, helping her build the strategic plan, which she sold to the board in August. And then Hurst called me one day in September when I was coming down from the cottage. He said, can you drop by Trails for a minute? And I said, sure. It's Stouffville. So I dropped by. And he said, Greg, you've done such a good job with Mel of building this plan. Why don't you come on the board and help deliver it? And I said, Hurst, I said, hang on a minute. I said, writing plans, it's easy. Everything works. Revenue beats expenses. And all that. I said, delivering on a plan is a whole different bag of tricks. I said, I don't know about that. But of course, by that time, Mark, I was totally hooked. I'd fallen in love with the project again, with the site, and with Mel, who's a terrific leader. So I said, sure. So I came to the board in October. And then in February, Hurst called me up. He was with his son, Jimmy, in his truck driving to Trails. And I knew he'd had some health problems, but he'd hid them very well. Mark, and he called me and said that, Greg, I've chosen medically assisted in dying for February 29th. Do you mind taking over as chair of Trails? So it was like a huge surprise and two emotions. I felt very honored that he would think of me to do that, and also scared because he was a very charismatic and effective leader. And to step into those shoes, obviously I could step into those shoes. I had to be my own guy, but it was quite a thing to do. So I became, at the last board meeting attended, I was elected chairman in February. And then in March, I had my first own board meeting in March 11th. And then we had this great plan, remember, to double Trails. And then on March 13th, COVID hit, right? So, you know, that great line from that great American intellectual, Mike Tyson, who says, we all have a plan until you get punched in the mouth. And our plan, we had to go to virtual and all that kind of stuff. So that got thrown out the window. But we survived and learned a lot of things and came out of COVID in good strength. And now we're well on the track to doubling. And so that's a long answer to your short question, how to get involved. But there it is.
That's great. Sounds really meaningful work that you're a part of. And what a fantastic program.
It is. It's very good.
Tell me, what do you love the most about your involvement with this organization?
That's a good follow-on for the last question, because it's, you know, I like quotes, and the one I've always liked and I've always put at the bottom of my resume is from Catherine Graham on the Washington Post. She said, to do what you love and be good at it and feel that it matters, what could be better? And I'm doing what I love. And the mission of Trails, which is to transform lives, totally overlaps with my mission, my written mission, which is to help people realize their full human potential. So when you get missions overlapping like that, it's the best it can be. Plus, on top of that, working with great people like Mel and the board, it's fun. The idea of helping people transform their lives is, I don't know if there's any better than that.
Said, yeah, just hearing that about seeing these kids over the years develop and become leaders in their own right is really something to be proud of. Congratulations on aligning yourself with such a great cause. Going back, I know we did an interview 9 years ago. Some of these questions might sound familiar, always worth hearing the answers. What did you learn early in your career that has made the biggest difference?
I don't know exactly what I said then, but it's just become clearer and clearer to me, especially at Trails, actually. And that is, the most important thing is to keep your promises. And the second most important thing is to always work with people who feel the same way. Because it is so frustrating working with people who don't, especially in a volunteer organization. So that to me is, that's table stakes.
Right. The old do what you say you're going to do.
Yeah. I've always liked the I think it's Covey's definition of integrity, which is to make sure your words are integrated with your actions, right? That the two go together. It's just, when you find people like that, hang on to them. That's your friends, and that's your business associates, that's your teammates in sports. It doesn't mean you always win or you always get what you wanted, but at least the process is a lot more fun.
That's for sure. Greg, how important have mentors been in your career?
Mentors are key, and there's lots of them in your life. I thought about this question, and as always, just try to pick out three. And for me, they're starting off, and when I was working at General Foods, there was Scott McDermott, who taught me analysis and getting to the numbers and getting to what he called the unshakable facts, which is keep your bias out of things, try to get to the unshakable facts. And then another huge one for me was Dr. Paul Wollner, who helped me at College Pro, helped me professionalize College Pro, take it from a one-man entrepreneurial shop where there was at the very beginning, it was me with the customer. So there's just no layers between me and the customer. By the end, there was like five layers. So that to professionalize that organization and make sure the goals of everyone and the values stay aligned is a tricky thing to do. And he helped me a lot with that. And then, of course, the last one would be Hurst, who just taught me so much. He taught me things that I know are important, but I'm not necessarily good at them. But one of his huge things is dreaming big. I'm not necessarily good at that. What I am good at is if take a dreamer's idea and help make it happen. But I tend to shy away from dreaming big. But you think of what he created, it's just out of nowhere with very little resources. It's incredible. So I'm hoping to take what he built and help to continue to professionalize it and build into its DNA the factors, the strengths that allow it to carry on and live long after me and any other people on the board. And one other thing on Hurst that, again, but this what I do is in my DNA as well, which is to the importance of long-term relationships. He's built long-term relationships with people, both funders and professionals, who at the first, the beginning, there's no real tangible going back and forth in a relationship, but years later it kicks in and is of huge value. So it's, you got to be in the long-term business.
That's for sure. Having that long-term vision makes a big difference, right? Absolutely. What are you most excited about at this point?
I always have, right back to the beginning. I've always loved to see results, whether it's at a hockey game, it is great to have a nice play, but it's like to have an end of the goal in business. I love the process of business, but at the end of the year, you didn't make a profit. It's not so good. Right? I like doing a great sales pitch, but if you don't close the sale, so that's why Trails is so rewarding, Mark, because the highlight of the year is the Saturday in June when the graduating cohorts graduate, and they graduate from Trails, not from high school. Although I will say one of their huge successes is that 99% of our kids who come from inner city Toronto graduate high school, which is well above the average. And so that to me is a great result. When they graduate from Trails, there's a ceremony, which is very impactful, where each kid who's now 16 and has been through 4 years of Trails stands up and says a little something about, first they're actually introduced by their facilitator, the person who's usually been with them for 4 years to the tank, and just can talk about the change from their age 12 to 16 as they became an adult, basically, or very close. And then the kid usually has a few things to say about what impact Trails had on him. And the odd time, right out of the blue, a parent will pop up and say, I want to add something. And the word they always use is family or second family. And you just see the transformation, and it's heartwarming, and it makes you feel that all this is worthwhile. So results on a human scale, which are very impactful.
The next question is what motivates you, but I want to put some context on it. How do you think your motivation has changed over the years from when you first started as an entrepreneur to what motivates you now?
It's a good question. I think, so it's similar to the last question, because there's both process and outcomes. And I would have said in the College Pro days, if all I had my eyes on was the profit at the end of, because our season really ran from April to September. And in April, I'm deeply in the red. And in September, hopefully I'm in the black or I can't come back next year. Right. But if all I was motivated by was getting to September, you've got to enjoy the parts in between. You got to enjoy those times going out with managers and just seeing them land one job and one each guy or gal getting the results they want. I guess there's a there's two things going on there. I enjoy the process of having each one be successful, but there's lots of little victories along the way. I see when they land their first job, or their first job comes in successfully, or they hire the first painter. But at the end of the day, you've got to have the payoff of, but you're going to have a payoff that they, he made, that, that manager made money, and the overall company made money. So I think it's the, I think what's key in there though, is probably what we talked about in the last question, which is I love seeing the transformation of whether it be that Trails youth or that college pro manager who, remember, was an 18-year-old, but at the time, one of them young males who I'd met in September that went behind the ears, think they can be great business people, but really don't have the idea. And then you see them over the summer as they do all those little things, and you meet them at the end of the summer at the manager's weekend, and they're, you know, pretty confident, sometimes cocky, sometimes overly confident. A young business manager on a $100,000 business had 10 painters and had 100 customers and got a whole new approach to how they can take on life. And I carry on with that. I met a lot of them since at different things. I run into them at conventions or things, or when I used to have a profit call, they responded to my columns and talk about the impact it had in their life. So it's, I guess it's like those Trails grads standing up and saying the impact it had. And that's, I'd say that's extremely satisfying to me.
Yeah, developing people into better humans, whether it was, you know, 30 plus years ago or more recently with a younger generation, is pretty impressive and worthwhile work. From a
satisfying, for sure.
Absolutely. From a managerial perspective, you probably have, maybe your calendar's not so busy, but maybe it is. How do you prioritize what's most important?
It is still pretty busy.
No doubt.
But the good thing that's come onto it since we last chatted is grandchildren. So that's actually one of the reasons I'm cutting down the for-profit side of my business in terms of having businesses I consult with. I'm just gradually letting go of those because gradually more grandchildren coming into the picture. But prioritizing your time, as if there's two scarce resources in the world, there's money, and time is the toughest one because you can buy money with time, but you can't buy time with money. There's only so many hours and so many years you got. So to me, it's the most precious resource. And as you get a little older, you realize it's even more finite. One of the last Blue Sky sessions I was at was actually Dr. Paul Wollner and a couple of my college pro buddies. He put up a flip chart on the wall and divided a whole bunch of squares. And he said, roughly, say you got 10 years left, 365 days, you got 3,650 squares. How are you going to fill them? And all of a sudden it becomes finite. You go, whoa. So the method is the same though. I start with what my mission is, and I revise it every year. It's written that what is it, the big goal you want to accomplish. So given that, and big of that is transforming lives. So then what I want to do this year is a number of goals. And then each week you just revisit that. What I want to get done this week that moves you towards your mission and towards those annual goals, because it's, I always love that line that the main thing is to make sure the main thing remains the main thing. And it is so easy to get off track, whether in a business or your personal life, you're just coming back to those goals. And that works for me.
You've got a lot of practice at prioritizing, I'm sure. And congratulations on the grandkids. That's fantastic. How many are you at now?
Two. That's wild because I have six kids and two grandchildren, and a couple of my friends have one kid and six grandchildren. So the law of large numbers doesn't work. We have two girls, Brooks and Sloan, and nicely compared to when I grew up, my grandparents were far, far away and there was no FaceTime or anything like that. So I maybe saw them once every 2 years, whereas these kids at least a couple of times a month, and then on the video screen all the time. So it's way different grandparenting experience than my parents had.
That's great. And how old are they?
Two, approximately. One turned two, Brooks turned two in July, and Sloan will turn two in November. And just thought that we have we had the very first Christmas, so that Brooks would have been 6 months and Sloan would have been two. We had them over at our house. And they're both sitting on the couch together. And the difference is incredible. Like they're quite big, quite different. Now, well, of course, they're both two, and there's no difference at all. But it's how quickly the gap closes.
That's great. Since we last spoke, my parents are also grandparents now. My brother had a little girl, Kyla, and she's four. It's been nice getting to know her.
And you're an uncle.
I'm an uncle. Yeah, proud uncle. Let's talk a little bit about books. You got a library behind you, probably a whole bunch of favorites that you've picked up over the years. What are books you revisit or go back to, or if you're recommending them, they're high on the list. What jumps out for you?
Yeah, good question. There is a big library behind me. My wife is always wanting me to try to cull it down. We have a big book sale in our church every April. But I'll take a book out and I go, I already like that, but I might read it again. They've all been read, and some of them two times. That's a good question. Which ones did you read again? So general answer, the things I do love, a general umbrella heading would be history. And within history, I like biography particularly, because as Kissinger said, history is biography. It's made by people. And so I tend to read those. But the ones I've gone back to would be, there was a great one written by the editors of The Economist called The Fourth Revolution, which is talking about the development from liberalism and then liberal democratic capitalism. And that's, of course, going through all kinds of challenges these days. So I've often gone back to it as a reference. I loved Graham Allison's Destined for War, which is, he was one of the first authors that to bring me about 3 or 4 years ago, that the rise of China and what was happening there. But other favorites, particularly with the situation in Israel, I've read a ton of Israeli history, but I also like the biographies like Ben-Gurion, Begin, and Netanyahu, and of course, Peres and Rabin. They're just always interesting people involved with a very interesting story. In the United States, of course, I love 1776, Hamilton, Alexander Hamilton and Washington. By reading their biographies, you get quite an understanding of the challenges the United States is facing today. It's basically the same issues they're facing then. So I love the category I love.
That's great.
There's just finished, total change of subject. I've just finished on our flight back from BC in the airport. They were selling the Elon Musk biography by Isaacson. So I picked that up and it was fascinating. And it's, if you want to talk about a role model capitalist in the Ayn Rand version of capitalism, or the Schumpeter's definition of capitalism was creative destruction. That's Elon Musk, right? He's totally revolutionized 5 or 6 industries. He's he'd be a really hard guy to spend any time with, but fascinating how he just questions everything and changes everything and brings about a whole new concept of way to do things. So that was a fascinating read.
There's a lot of good books in there. And fortunately, we've got this being recorded and a note taker going. So I'll be able to go through them and pick out some ones for myself and given a bit of reading time. So thank you for that.
I'm happy to lend you some, but you got to give them back.
All right. Next time I'm in Toronto area, I'll pick one off the shelf. How's that?
Sure.
This is one of my favorite questions. If you could give advice to your 20-year-old self, what would you say?
This time I'm sure my answer is the same as last time, because it's the core of everything, which is the importance of your values. Because often in college pro days, I used to do what I call the wedding cake, which the base of the wedding cake would be your values, on top of which you'd put your strategic plan, on top of which you'd put your 1-year plan, your goals. But the base that's the rock of Gibraltar underneath it all is your values. And it's a phrase that gets tossed about so much in business, and you see the values on the wall. But for an individual, and a lot of businesses don't follow them, unfortunately. But for an individual to try to sort out at age 20 what they are, and to do that, it's nothing like paper or digital now. Write them down. To write down what you think they are and just check in on it once a year. Because I think you'll find a couple of things. As I said before, keeping your promises, integrity would be a top value for me. So you, what you'll find in life is that as you find people who share those values, you'll be able to get along with them better, whether in a business or in a relationship, a friendship, or on a sports team. So it's best to know what your own are so you can suss out whether you're the same or not. And also when you find yourself feeling uncomfortable at something, whether something you've done or about to do, 9 times out of 10, you'll find it's because you're breaking one of those values that either came from your parents, your grandparents, a coach somewhere, something you read, your religion. So just try to write them down, suss them out at least once a year, and try to hang around people that can help you stick to them.
That's great advice. And I don't think enough 20-year-olds hear that. So hopefully this message gets out to them. And I imagine do they lean in on the values thing in Trails quite a bit?
Yeah, it's right on one of the things I love about Trails, Mark, actually, if you ever leave Mexico, get up there, I'll take you around. Hearst was an advertising man, a marketing man, which means he's big at communication. So all the central concepts of Trails are very clear, very succinct. There's a triangle that hangs outside trails. In the corner of each one are the values. There's physical and emotional safety, roots and wings, and fun. And any program we do, Mel always goes, well, does it meet those three criteria? And then in the middle, he's got the vision for trails. He's got the mission. The mission is to work with vulnerable youth from at-risk areas to help them become contributing members of the community and provide them with the skills and the confidence to use them. So I can rattle it off because it's pretty simple. And so everything we do, we say, is that gonna push towards that? So Hearst did a good job of clarifying the values, but then communicating them over. The values, the vision, and the mission are very clear at Trails, and that provides us with a very clear North Star to guide us.
That's awesome. I really love that. A simple question to wrap things up. What are you grateful for?
That one's pretty easy because I don't know if she can hear me, but she's right across the hall from me here. That'd be my wife and my family. It's just a joy to wake up every day and know that they're there and to have time with them. I try to make a practice of having a little one-on-one time, ideally a trip with each one of my kids every year. And I write an annual Christmas letter. And when I write that letter, the great thing about that is it causes you to do what Samuel Johnson said was to reflect, and you reflect on the year. And invariably, the things I pick are the highlight would be those trips, at least one of them. Now, just speaking of trips, I was supposed to be leaving next Friday with my eldest son, Cameron, to go to Israel. But it looks like that is not, well, that we've canceled that. That's not going to happen.
Right.
The last time we planned that was June of 2020, and there was a pandemic. So we've been struck by lightning twice. It's funny, the guys at hockey were saying, what's the matter with you? You let a little pandemic and a little war stop you from going? What's the matter with you? So hopefully we'll get off to that. But that's where that I'm very grateful to have had the family I came from, my parents and six siblings. I'm very happy to have the family. I have my wife and six kids. It's those are unduplicatable things in your life.
It's been 9 years since we last went through these questions, and I'm just so appreciative to get to reconnect. It feels like I'm talking to an old friend, and we don't know each other that well, but it means a lot that you made some time again to share these ideas with me and the audience listening. And I'm grateful for your time and appreciative of how generous you've been with your mentorship and words of advice. So thank you.
Thank you, Mark. If you've got a few minutes, just tell you what on earth took you to India and Goa, and what did you learn over there besides wanting to play guitar?
Yeah, I was working with a technology company. I'll back up. I was doing this podcast, and I started going down the list of the fastest growing companies in Canada, the Profit 500. Not a bad group of CEOs to know,
right?
I started to meet some fantastic people, and one of them, his name is Vijay Thomas, and Vijay is originally from India, but he has a tech company in Toronto. So this tech company, I created a few leadership shows for them that they would have guests similar to what I was doing to build relationships and tell stories. And this was 9 years ago, before people were really doing a lot of podcasting. So we were a bit ahead at that time. And I broke up with my girlfriend. We were living in Liberty Village, and I went to Vijay and said, hey, I'm not sure what my next step is, where I'm going to live. And I'd been with the company for about a year and had in my head that I knew they had an office in India, but I'd never really been there. And there were about 50 people working out of that office. And he said, would you like to go to Goa? And that decision absolutely changed my life. I went to India for a week to assess, is this something that I want to do? And I went with Vijay. So we checked out the office, we met the team, and I was tasked with leading a sales team, which in its own right had built-in challenges, but I was helping out with marketing and just the Western presence in an Indian office. It was an incredible experience. And very quickly, I had a six-month contract to hit some targets and had a lot of fun working hard, but at the same time, a whole new experience. The neighbor to the office that I was in, it was the family that the Fernandez family, and they own the oldest music store in Goa. So it's been around since the 70s, and they must have sold instruments and strings to the Beatles when they were in Goa. So much history. And after 6 months, you know how Toronto gets quite cold, and I know what's there. So I kept being drawn to go back to not only work, but continue to be immersed with, because the cost of living is so low, you get this influx of musicians from all over the world who come from Europe and will live in India for a few months at a time. And then they'll go back to Europe in the summer to perform and do all this stuff. So the community that I surrounded myself with was just these incredible people that were very generous with their time. I know you're learning the guitar. Imagine having just these fantastic teachers to show you things. And that's what I was very fortunate to be in that kind of space. Fast forward, I think there was one season that I didn't go for whatever reason. A bit of a break is often a good thing to reflect and see, is that something that I want to keep doing? And I ended up just before lockdown, 3 years ago, something like that, I went to India. I think it was March 10th of 2020. And if you'll remember, I think lockdown was announced the 11th or something like that. So when I...
13th, because that's when trails got shut down.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think my flight was on the Sunday, the 11th or something like that. And so by the time I landed and arrived, Canada was closed. So had I booked it a day later or what have you, very different. I ended up being there for close to 2.5 years. There were opportunities to come back. There's things that I missed out on, my brother's little daughter and that part of her life. But it was a wonderful experience, not without its challenges. I don't know if much about Goa, India, but there's 6 really good months and then it rains for the monsoon for a few months. But there was a really good community that fortunately everyone felt very safe. And we did have a beach right there. So plenty of sunshine and opportunities to just take care of each other. I know it's a long time, but I'm very grateful for the opportunity to, now I've become a bit of a musician. And when I was 16, I asked my parents for a guitar and they gave it to me. They've always been so generous. But it just wasn't the right time in my life to learn guitar. I just turned 40 on October 2nd, so not long ago. And when I was 32, I went to India. And that was the first time I had the space to, I didn't have any friends. I didn't know anyone. So what do? The guys who own the music shop might as well give it a try. And I immediately fell in love with the songwriting aspect of it. I did stand-up comedy at Humber College for a night school class. So I really liked the editing of a joke and like tightening it up to make it really succinct. It's just been this organic adventure that still has me traveling. And with an instrument, I jokingly now have a small backpack with a few t-shirts, a guitar on my back. And now I was in Colombia for 6 months in Medellin trying to learn Spanish. And I tore my Achilles. Like I was playing soccer and a gunshot went off. The thing exploded. I'm probably 8 months out of that injury. But what I realized was I could rollerblade. So it was a different muscle group. And I grew up from probably 3-4 years old with the creek in the backyard in Mississauga, learning to skate and then playing AA and AAA hockey, played up with the derbies in junior for a little bit. So just going back to, and in India, you're not rollerblading anywhere. The roads are not designed for that. So just being back in Toronto for a little while, I went to Vancouver also, and to be able to skate, you play hockey, so you know the feeling of just having that kind of freedom under your feet, and to be immobilized for a little while on crutches and in a cast, to rediscover skating again was a real joy. I know it's a bit of a long-winded answer, but that kind of fills you in on a little bit of the journey where I've been. The company that I started is less than a year old. There's no way, a million guesses, I would have ever thought I'm going to India and I'm standing in front of a green screen in Sayulita
in Mexico
talking to you.
Yes. It's wild. You're right. I mean, an expression my brother Paul uses all the time. Just got to keep following your nose, right? Follow your nose, what's right in front of you, what makes sense. Just keep following that. And you did. You went and met that guy, BJ, and then you went on a trip just out of the blue and you took that job. But a question I wanted to ask you way back when was,
sure,
you talked about what bringing Western business philosophy to an Indian office. What was that like? What are the differences? What stood out?
There is a much slower pace of life there. It's not the hustle and bustle of a city. Everyone's on a bike and it's warm. So people are stopping for chai at the side of the road. There's not this kind of urgency of we need to get something done, which you learn to appreciate the time that you have, and family and friends are really important there. And they do have a very good work ethic. Like, it's not uncommon for people to just in the having to work late and have the energy to do that. It takes a certain type of person to be able to have energy to do that. But I found that just the philosophy around showing up with putting your best foot forward, but from a place of compassion and humility and respect. And I know there's a lot of parallels between the two, but Goa was a Portuguese colony in the 1700s there. And everyone speaks English for the most part. I did learn a little bit of Hindi and got a pretty good head nod going. But I did enjoy all of the foods. I don't know if you like Indian food, but had plenty of spicy food. And yeah, made a lot of good friends, both work colleagues and other travelers that I met on that trip. Yeah, it's been plenty of memories, no shortage of things to be grateful for. And in all that time, it's not to be painted as completely like a rosy picture. There were many highs and lows along the way as life inevitably throws our way. But all in all, I never regret having made the decision to go there, because in many ways it's shaped who the person I am. And I still have a ton to learn, but I'm grateful for the opportunity to be where I am and take it one step at a time.
You use the word grateful a lot, which is important because it's in your brand name. But the other thing that struck me as you're talking, just because of the latest book I read, but you talked about they take things a little more slowly in India. Elon Musk his head would blow up in India. It's just, I don't know, have you read much about it? Like he sets deadlines that are impossible and then fires people if they can't get it done. And he works 24/7 and sleeps underneath the desk at the office. I mean, he's just, as somebody once said to me, you find a driven man, you often wonder, what's at their inner core? What's driving them? It's usually it's a sense of inadequacy or something they have to fulfill. That, because we often use the word driven man. That's something that's good. He's a driven CEO, but that means that somebody else has got control of the steering wheel. I don't think it's necessarily a good thing. That strikes me that the Indian approach to that, both India and the indigenous people here, have another take on things, which the West could learn a lot from.
Absolutely. And environments are often shaping, right? I put myself in an environment with musicians and I learned to play guitar, right? In Toronto, I became a hockey player, right? Like, it's your environment can shape you in many different ways. Now, right. Vijay, the owner of the business, I never met a more driven, hardworking entrepreneur, but he also lives in Toronto, but he grew up in Goa. So he went to did his MBA at the Goa Institute of Management, and really bright guy. His company Tangentia actually won the contract to do all of the integration of beer and grocery for all of the LCBO. And when they did that changeover years ago. So the fact that you can go to Loblaws and get yourself a six pack is his company runs billions of dollars of B2B transactions through that pipeline. A nod to him. He taught me a lot, definitely about work ethic. Now building this business, I'm often up at 5 a.m. getting things done. My assistant starts at 6 and then a day full of calls. So to have calls like this that I get to learn and connect is a really nice break from some of the other calls. They all have to happen, but I particularly am fond of these ones. This has been a lot of fun.
Well, if you're up at 5 a.m., it's been a long day for you already.
Oh yeah, by 3 o'clock, it feels sometimes like you almost hit a wall, but I'm doing that. Have you ever tried that intermittent fasting?
My stepson is big on that. He's trying to encourage me to do that. He goes right till noon, but he says if I eat at 7, it can last till 7 the next morning. That's pretty good. That's 12 hours. You're doing this? What are you doing this now?
I'm probably not doing it perfectly, but I don't think anyone's perfect. So I'll have some coffee during the day, and I'll just have a meal at dinner, and that'll be enough. So it's one meal, Yeah. Wow. There's, as they call them, feeding windows. And this one is a 20-40. So 20 hours of fasting and then 4 hours of, you can have not whatever you want, but here in Mexico, it's usually tacos. I really like the local cuisine. And actually, along the lines of fasting, I never fasted before I went to India. It wasn't even on the radar. But you meet people, and I met this beautiful girl. She looked like an angel. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, why does your skin look the way it does? Because I haven't had any food for 5 days. And I was like, excuse me? I'm like, so she explained fasting and water only fasting. And I looked into it. And I'm like, she looks that good. I got to at least give it 24 hours and see what I can do. So there I go, first fast, 24 hours. And I'm a big proponent of research. So after 24 hours, as I was getting to that, when I could eat again, I would start Googling, what would happen if I go a little bit further, like the next 24 hours? What does that do to the body? How does it recreate your cells? And I kept doing that every 24 hours, revisiting. Do I feel like I could go a little bit farther? You're not going to believe this, but I thought I did 10 days, but I actually did 11 days with just water, ginger tea, and a little bit of cayenne in water. And I was running every day. I was working out every day. And after probably day four, the appetite for food did not exist. And the science behind it is that most of us have enough fat around our belly that could power us for a long time. So it wasn't a supervised fast, but I had people around me checking in, make sure I was fine. But my energy was like super high. I liken it to back in the days when we were foragers as humans, we'd probably have to go long periods along a river or across dangerous terrain with mostly just water, unless we could find something here or there. But our bodies are these incredible things that I feel like a fast doesn't necessarily need to be 11 days, or people have done it for much longer, but your fat cells are your fuel. If you have extra fat, a fast is a great way to really cut down. But from a spiritual perspective, I felt extremely in touch with myself and my surroundings, and appreciative for that first bite of food. I think it was a strawberry that I had after 11 days was like the greatest thing ever. And
you said after 4 days, you'd lost your appetite for food, but not your taste for it. I guess you didn't crave it.
No, the food craving stopped. Something that I would tell myself is to just drown my hunger in water. So if there was any, just I'd be drinking a lot of water and kind of like just completely refiltering my body. And after probably that long, most cells have reconfigured themselves to be brand new cells. The guy I was 10 days earlier from a molecular level has probably for the most part completely been transformed. So I came out a different person on the other side. And I haven't done anything like that since. That was a one-off. I think the most that I've done is maybe a 5-day fast. But it is something that I don't know if your son, or was it your son, that if he's done any multi-days, but you can tell him you talk to this crazy guy who...
I will. I'm listening. I'm going to talk to him. I know you got to go, but what can you just... What was the impact that had on you, both physically and mentally after that? And how did you follow up the 11 days? Did you build that into your regimen in some way?
The experience of it was clarity of mind. So I felt at peace. I felt I didn't need anything. Like there was no desire for food. That hunger that we get is something that our brain is, it's an automatic response after a while, that no different than if you normally only eat one meal, you're not having those cravings during the day because that's what you're used to. I read enough about it that I was convinced that having this kind of experience would really clear me out from a just like a healthy body. And I did lose a lot of weight. The feedback that I got, people did notice like a noticeable difference in my skin and attitude and a whole bunch of things. I would say the biggest takeaway was peace of mind and knowing that I'm in control of my body and my life. And yeah, this sense of empowerment that it's like the decision to be able to say no to something again and again, and that discipline can carry over into other things. Now, it wasn't like all I was doing was fasting. I was playing guitar, I was reading, I was working out, I was going for runs on the beach and probably not hanging out in too many restaurants, but it was incredible experience and something that I'll always look back fondly on. On that same journey at a different time in India, I ran a marathon on the beach of Goa and I'd never done a marathon before. Again, it was one of these incremental things where I started running with a football or soccer ball each week. And it got to a place where I did 3 21K runs in a week. And I thought I was ready for a marathon. I was not. I did it anyways. I had a Garmin watch on just to track it, but it was just me from 1:30 in the afternoon till I finished it. Legs could barely move. For the first three quarters, I was kicking a soccer ball. And for the last hour, it was like almost pitch black. I'm there just trying to finish this run, middle of on the beach, walking by restaurants, people enjoying, having a good time. My legs are on fire. I can barely walk. And I finished it. I don't know what it is about these challenges that push you mentally to be larger than yourself or try to overcome something, but they're a destination to work for. And I do a big goal, something to work for. And whether it's physical or mental or business, it fires me up and gets me up early and motivated to have a good story to tell.
Yeah, no kidding. Sometimes. So a quick follow-up question. So you did 11 days, we heard about the, and what did you, what was your regimen after that? Did you continue to build intermittent fast?
Yes, that's a great question. So I did start to do intermittent fasting. And as far as food, I started, I believe, with some fruits and just soup and kind of things that weren't too heavy. And I would also, but man, that first meal was like unbelievable. And yeah, I got into a intermittent fasting routine. I haven't been always as disciplined with it. I think there's seasons. Sometimes you're in the breakfast mood and that's just the season you're in and breakfasts are great. You're in an environment where breakfasts are the thing, but as you experiment with different modalities of how much you want to be eating when, I really like having the energy. I don't like that crash after lunch. I need that afternoon energy. And I find so much of the battery, that human battery, is digesting food.
Right.
So if it's not digesting food, hopefully some of that is up here helping me solve some business problems or be more present with someone. So pushing it off and into the evening a little bit should at least my mind allow me to digest when it's not as important a time, maybe.
So that's what you're trying to stick to now is what you call the 24?
Yeah.
20 off the 4 hours where you got a window here when you can eat. That's what you're
just on. Yeah, just a little dinner, maybe the occasional dessert. I like a cheesecake. But it's more about the total calories that you're consuming. So if you're not having three meals, then it's concentrated on that one dinner. So you could still have a big dinner if you want, but it's not going to be, you're not stacking them up all day. It's not have that cumulative effect. And I'm not so disciplined with, if I was having breakfast, maybe I'm not picking out always the healthiest things, right? So automatically by making that decision that, okay, there is no breakfast, there's no lunch. So right away you've cut out maybe some bad choices you might make around foods that maybe aren't serving you. But I do love food. The idea of not having food is the ultimate form of delayed gratification and more of a mental exercise with incredible health benefits. If you haven't tried it before, I don't recommend it to everyone. Definitely talk to your doctor about it. but it is a very purifying experience that everyone should try at least once to see how their body reacts to it. And 24 hours isn't a long time. The real benefits of prolonged fasting come at 72 hours in that kind of 3-day window of fasting. And that's something that when I set out to do 11 days, I did not set out to do 11 days, right? That happened entirely by accident. It was just as a little bit forward, a little bit forward, a little bit forward. And then before you know it, you're pretty close to your goal or whatever you were after. Yeah. And hey, if I don't think I'll ever fast that long again, but I'm glad I did. And I feel like, especially if people are overweight, there are some real health benefits to intermittent fasting and prolonged water fasting. There's a great book I read called The Water Fasting Guide, it's a short read, but it talks about how to approach it, how to get started. Like, we need books for just drink water, but apparently we do.
So. You got me fascinated here. I'm gonna pay a little more attention to my son when I talk with him next time. I'm gonna say, Jonathan, you want to go for 11 days there, buddy?
Well, tell you what, I'll get you a copy of the water fasting guides. You could give away one of those other books, add a new one to your library.
All right. Very good. Great chatting with you. I was pretty sure this second half would be more interesting to me than the first half. So thank you for hanging in there.
No, this has been a lot of fun, and I hope you don't mind if we share both parts. I think that not a lot of people know some of my story, so I appreciate you changing roles and being the interviewer.
I would think it would have more impact on people than the stuff we talked about, to be quite honest, because it goes right to the core of you. What were the words you used? I felt peace of mind, and I got more in connect with myself. What's more important than that? That's pretty good.
You're right. This is why we do these things, right? We learn from each other, and everyone's at a different stage in their life. Listening to your advice, I probably get a lot more from it than hearing someone else talk about water fasting for me, right?
Yeah, true.
Because vice versa
for me. This was you took me down a whole alley. I wasn't sure where the conversation would go, but I'm pretty sure when you said it changed my life. I was pretty sure there's some interesting things in there. So we'll just probe away and see what comes up. So that was quite fascinating.
I'm sure it'll make for a interesting dinner time conversation with your son. And I'll get your address and I'll send a book over and let me know what you think of it.
I will. And happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any more.
I know this is a strange 9-year follow-up, but I hope it's not 9 years from now that we will connect again before then for sure. But it'd be nice to do another 9 years from now, the two of us a little grayer, a little older.
Like that.
Sharing some stories. All right, Greg. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye.
Okay, cheers.
Cheers. Tells me.